What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we'll be talking with a plastic surgeon about the benefits of Botox. After doing a little of my own research, I was blown away with how many conditions can be treated successfully with Botox. We're going to do a deeper dive today on the podcast. So let me introduce our special guest. Dr. Ashley Amalfi is a board-certified plastic surgeon at the Quitella Center for Plastic Surgery and is a clinical assistant professor of surgery at the University of Rochester. She graduated with a degree in fine arts and art history from the George Washington University and earned her doctorate of medicine from the University of Rochester. She completed an integrated residency at Southern Illinois University in Springfield, Illinois. She currently is in a group private practice with a focus on aesthetic surgery of the breast and body, as well as breast reconstruction. Dr. Amalfi is passionate about education and mentorship and has founded local chapters for women in plastic surgery, Association for Women Surgeons, and U of R Women in Surgery. Dr. Amalfi is an emerging leader in the field of plastic surgery and serves as the chair of the social media subcommittee, as well as the vice chair of the Women Plastic Surgeons Steering Committee. She is also the vice chair of the Breast Aesthetic Subcommittee for ASPS and involved in annual meeting planning. She contributes to Plastic Surgery News as the editor of the YPS Perspectives column and also is on the social media team for the Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery Journal and PRS Global Open. She is a co-host of the popular IGTV and YouTube show, Lipstick and Lipo, and a regular contributor to the social media for the American Society for Plastic Surgeons. She is married to another surgeon and they have two young children at home that keep them busy outside of the operating room. Welcome to the podcast, Doc.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting.
It's very exciting. And you have your own podcast too. I can't wait to talk more about that, the Lipstick and Lipo, later on.
Yeah, it's really fun. We'll get there. That'll be fun.
So let's talk about you to start. So what or who inspired you to go into the health field?
So there were no docs in our family, not even any nurses, really no medical professionals. I grew up in an Italian immigrant family and everyone had small businesses. And I had a little sister who had a lot of health concerns. And so my whole childhood, we saw medicine from the other side of things. So I saw it as a patient and as a family. And my mom says when I was 9 years old, I told her as we were in a waiting room, I'm going to be a doctor and I'm going to figure out what's wrong with my sister, Alyssa. And she said, okay, great. And then, you know, my brother chimed in that he was going to be a professional hockey player. And so no one took me very seriously because there was no one else around me doing those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But I never wavered and I stayed super interested in healthcare and medicine and had some really early exposure. Once I expressed that interest, my parents had friends who were doctors and they were always welcoming to let me shadow and see what that was like. And one of the first surgeons I ever shadowed was a plastic surgeon and I was hooked. Yeah, it's just a really diverse field and it's very artistic compared to other things. And that was my background. That's what I studied growing up. That's what I went to college for, was fine arts and art history. So once I saw plastics, it was just sort of like rainbows and unicorns. The world just made sense.
What a powerful emotional story too with your sister. That's amazing. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I saw that in your bio, the fine arts, that makes perfect sense. You're creative with your treatment. It is an art. It's a science, yeah, and an art.
It is. No two patients are alike. And what I get to do is sort of come up with a creative solution to a problem every day, and every single one is totally different. So I love the challenge of it. I mean, I am an aesthetic surgeon, and so everything that I do is three-dimensional art, I believe, and it's fulfilling in the same way that doing art, you know, with drawing and painting was fulfilling back when I was in undergrad. So I still get to fulfill that in medicine, which is a really cool marriage of the two.
So, okay, your specialty is plastic surgery, I guess, right? That's my next question. What is your specialty? Yes. And take us through a normal day at the office.
Yeah. I mean, plastic surgery is hard for some people to understand because you only see what you see on the news and you hear on the radio and the Dr. 90210s and the botched and things like that. But plastics is a pretty broad field, and my experience and training is really broad. So it's a competitive specialty after medical school, and always is, because it's sort of a coveted field to get into. And when we train in everything. So when I started in practice, I did everything from wound care to burn surgery to taking hand trauma with the orthopedic surgeons. So plastic surgery is so, so diverse, and aesthetic surgery is just a very small part of that. At this point, it's all that I do now is aesthetic plastic surgery of the breast and body. But I think that everyone doesn't realize just how many things we're trained in as plastic surgeons, sort of head to toe, children to adult. It's just a really diverse field. So what I do now in private practice is purely aesthetic surgery. So I work at the Cotella Center for Plastic Surgery. We are now 4 surgeon practice. So we have 2 facial plastic surgeons who do all the facial plastic surgery, and then 2 plastic and reconstructive surgeons, and we do all the body surgery. So I truly only specialize in cosmetic surgery of the breast and body. So tummy tucks, liposuction, mommy makeovers, and then injectables are a very small part of my practice. So I operate 2 to 3 days a week. And then on the other days, I see patients in the office. So preoperative new consultations, my postoperative patients, and then in between we do injectables like neuromodulators and fillers, which we'll get to talk about today. So it's busy.
Busy week. Yeah, absolutely.
Busy to say the least. And then I have all these other outside passions and things that I do with the society that definitely keep me busy, but they're engaging. And I think it keeps it fun in private practice because it's just not, you know, me and my partners on an island. I feel connected with other plastic surgeons across the country and students and trainees and stuff. And so it's fulfilling for sure.
Yeah, you got a lot on your plate. I just saw that. I mean, you're in so many different groups. You're a wife, you're a mother. That's so, it makes sense though. You're doing surgeries on certain days so that you're focused. You're just dialed in with surgery day. And the other days are patient days. Consult.
Yeah, I like to. Yeah, I totally sort of separate my days. Yeah. That's kind of how we run it in our practice. But I like how clean that is. You know, I'm in a different space mentally when I'm coming to operate all day. Right. I mean, physically, a lot of the surgery I do is really incredibly physical. So even my workouts are different on surgery days because I can burn 1,000 to 1,500 calories in the OR operating and, you know, doing liposuction. it's a very physical job, which I think a lot of people don't think about, especially when you're doing breast and body work, just because everything's really big.
I wouldn't have thought about that. You're right. Yeah, you're moving.
No,
you're lifting.
Oh, you're on your feet.
Yeah,
10 to 12 hours. And wow. Yeah, it's definitely a cardio workout for sure.
That's why you go to Embody, I think, right? That's how we met through Molly, I think.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great way to meet. She's fantastic. But
shout out to Molly. What's up, Molly?
I'm Mal.
So let's talk about Botox. That's the focus of today's chat. So what is Botox and what conditions does it treat?
So Botox is botulinum toxin. So it's a normal toxin that is made naturally from bacteria. And we've been using it in medicine for a variety of medical treatments. So this is not new in any way. It's only that the cosmetic FDA indication for Botox is just a little bit newer. But it essentially acts as a toxin by binding and preventing the release of acetylcholine from nerves. So nerves talk to muscles, and when our brain tells us that we need to move something, the nerve sends a signal to that muscle to fire. And when the nerve makes that signal, the muscle contracts and we have movement, whether that's making a frown face or running or jumping, any small or large movements are made in that way. And so the Botox prevents the communication essentially between the nerve and the muscle. So your brain still thinks, oh, I want to raise my eyebrows, but that signal never gets to your muscle and that muscle does not contract. And then the goal of it in cosmetics is to prevent wrinkles and to lessen the formation of wrinkles. So when we're firing a muscle in the same way over and over, it creates a repetitive crease in the skin. And over time that creates a scar, which is a wrinkle. And so if we prevent that repetitive motion, which is really not functionally needed, and allow the skin to just heal and soften, then it's going to prevent the formation of those wrinkles. Or if they're already there, it's going to allow that wrinkle to have rest and time to heal so that some of the facial lines remain nice and smooth as we age.
Now, how long does it normally last, a treatment?
So treatment lasts about 3 to 6 months. Usually when patients are new to Botox, I think that the treatments last a little bit longer, and then the body recognizes it on subsequent injections and can metabolize it just a little bit quicker. But most of my patients come in for treatments 3 or 4 times a year. And sometimes younger patients only come twice a year because it will really last for them a good 6 months. For me, it's probably 3 to 4 months is typically how long Botox lasts. And that's the average.
Are there any side effects to that? Is there a downside to getting it too frequently?
We really don't need to inject it unless the muscle is moving again. So once the muscle is moving, we know that the Botox has worn off and it's time to re-inject. If we were to inject when the patient was still frozen, it wouldn't really do anything because there's no neurons that are free to uptake the Botox. So you only need it as frequently as you do, but if that's 3 months, then you know you're metabolizing it quickly, or it's 6 months, and that's the way that your body metabolizes it. It's still completely safe to treat whenever movement comes back. And patients don't like to get complete wrinkles back because they get right. So excited with how things look when they're nice and smooth that once they start having a little bit of motion, they'll give me a call or they'll have their scheduled appointment and then we'll re-inject. So that's completely safe. But every patient's interval is just a little bit different.
Now, when I hear toxin, I throw up the red flag and I get nervous. Now, what if you have autoimmune conditions? What if you're already kind of immunocompromised? Could some of those toxins leach into your bloodstream and cause headaches, cause joint pain? No?
It's a completely local injection. Mm. So the amount of fluid that we're actually injecting with the reconstituted Botox is about 0.1 mils into each injection. So this is tiny, tiny aliquots of fluid, and it's directly injected into a muscle. So, I mean, I think this is why it's critical that the person doing your Botox is truly an expert in anatomy. And that's why, you know, we sort of always advocate for seeing a board certified plastic surgeon or dermatologist for these procedures, because we know the anatomy. I know exactly where the muscle is, where it attaches, where it inserts, that is causing the movement we're targeting. And so I'm very strategically injecting into that muscle belly. So it's very much a localized injection and not a systemic one.
So acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter, you said, right? And that binds to the receptors on the muscle belly or on the tendon? Like where is it in the muscle?
It's into the striated and also smooth muscle. So it actually causes those fibers to contract. So it's actually onto the muscle belly, not
muscle
the
belly.
It's actually firing the muscle belly. Yeah.
And that Botox is binding to that receptor so that the acetylcholine cannot, right?
So that it binds on the nerve side of things. So that the acetylcholine is actually never released. it blocks the release of acetylcholine so that chemical signal is never transmitted from the nerve to the muscle.
That makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so who can administer Botox? You just recommended that, you know, a dermatologist or a plastic surgeon, but who technically can administer it?
Any physician or medical practice can technically purchase a medication, but just because they can purchase it doesn't mean that they should inject it. And you'll see a variety of different, you know, practitioners who do those injections. But if you do not know the anatomy, then you could inadvertently inject into the wrong place and cause consequences or side effects from injecting the wrong muscle or migration into the wrong muscle. Like you hear people talk about having a droopy eyelid after Botox. It's not really a side effect of Botox. It's essentially that the botulinum was injected and migrated into the muscle of the eyelid, which is not where it should be injected. So someone who maybe doesn't know the anatomy and injected just a little bit too low and too close to the brow is unaware of how intimately attached those muscles are. And so it's affecting a muscle, not in a side effect, it's doing its job. It's just, it was injected too close to the wrong spot. And then it's not a desired outcome.
What happens then? Do you give medication to clear it?
There isn't an agent that you can use, like an eye drop, that stimulates a sympathetic muscle in the eyelid that can cause it to open just a little bit more, but it's very short acting. So you would have to, like, if you're going to take a picture and you had a droopy eyelid, you could put these drops in, it'll raise your eyelid for a temporary amount of time. You take your family pictures, but ultimately you just wait for the medicine to wear off. And in that case, you know, fortunately,
it could be months. That could be 3 to 4 months.
Right. Oh, man. The good news is that because it's usually not injected into that muscle, it just migrates to that muscle. It's a much lesser dose. And so it typically will resolve much quicker than the rest of the Botox wears off. But, you know, fortunately, I really don't see my patients with those sort of things. And I do see, unfortunately, a lot of patients who come in and say, you know, I went somewhere and I thought it was a little weird and I knew I probably shouldn't have my Botox done there, but it was so convenient and I did it. And now I'm so mad at myself and here I am. And so sometimes there's not a lot I can do after the fact. And then those patients sort of realize and come to understand how much that certification matters, but it does, because sometimes when things aren't done well, there's not a lot that we can do but wait and do their injection in a more appropriate way once it's all worn off.
So moral of the story, I mean, if you're a patient and you don't like where you're at, like, you don't have to go ahead with the treatment. Stop, leave, do some more research, find a qualified practitioner that knows their anatomy and knows what they're doing to avoid these complications. What about, is it safe long-term? Is there any scientific literature on that?
There's really great clinical trials because there are many FDA indications for Botox. So there's great long-term data for all of the different usage. Now, so, you know, you can use it for spasticity, muscle spasm, blepharospasm, Bell's palsy, clenching and tightening or trismus of the jaw. But there are certain indications that are FDA approved and some that are not. So the cosmetic ones in the face that are FDA approved are the glabella lines, which are the creases between the eyebrows, and the little crow's feet, which are the creases around the corners of your eyes. So those are the ones where we have big, large clinical trials with good long-term data, because those are the indications that were brought through the FDA. But it's very similar clinical data, which with a very good safety profile for all of the other indications, which are more medically based. So, you know, we use this in vocal cords, we use it in bladders, we use it in Achilles spasticity. So lots of indications, and lots of other physicians who've been using Botox as a medical treatment and as really just a local reagent for many, many years. So very little to no side effects of Botox use.
I was talking to a patient this morning that we were going to have this podcast, and she said, oh, I want to try Botox for sweating, for stopping me from sweating.
It's a great, yeah, it's an indication.
I've never heard about that in the armpit region.
Yes. Yeah. So there are definitely patients who I inject their armpits. It's called hyperhidrosis. So they just have excessive sweating, which is a sympathetic function. So we just talked about it affecting both smooth muscle and striated skeletal muscle. And so the smooth muscle causes those sweat glands to release sweat. And the Botox will have the same effect on that smooth muscle as it does on our facial muscles. And so it paralyzes the ability for those glands to contract and release sweat. And so you do lots of these tiny little injections in the armpit and they stop sweating. It's pretty amazing. I actually treated someone in my office when I was training in Illinois, and we thought, like, let's just do one armpit and see what this is like and see how well it works. And she literally came to me like 2 weeks later. She's like, Dr. Malfi, it's unbelievable, but now I literally have one sweat stain and it is weirder, and we need to treat my other armpit. And so we treat lots of patients for hyperhidrosis. It is a pretty big dose to treat that whole area, but the nice thing about the armpits is it tends to last a really long time. So unlike our facial muscles, which are contracting all day long and essentially metabolizing the medicine, in our armpits, there's not a lot of muscular movement. And so it tends to last at least a year, in some patients, many years. So it's really a pretty excellent, you know, solution to a very common problem.
But now sweating is healthy to detoxify the body.
So
does it stop all sweating, or it just reduces the sweating?
It is just going to locally stop sweating. So patients sweat to reduce body temperature in other areas. So it might be their torso or their back or behind their knees or different things like that. But it only reduces and affects the very localized tissue it's injected into, just like the face. And so you still sweat to reduce your body temperature, just won't be in your armpits.
Gotcha. What other conditions are treated with Botox?
So Bell's palsy and the muscular spasms that come with that. So it's a great treatment to help with the unnecessary movements that you have when patients are reinnervated after Bell's palsy, called synkinesis. It can also be used in...
What is that? What is Bell's palsy? Yeah, just remind listeners what that is.
Bell's palsy is facial paralysis. So it's an idiopathic facial paralysis where patients just have their facial nerve that just doesn't work. And when that comes back, it can cause hyperspasticity because the muscles are not reinnervated properly. And so it can help with quieting some of those unwanted muscular movements that those patients can have. In children who have spasticity, so who are hypertonic or have abnormal muscle tone, Botox has been used for decades to help reduce the sort of tension and soften the muscular response to make those patients more comfortable and help with range of motion. We talked about the armpits, that hyperhidrosis, which is a really good indication for it as well. The cosmetic indications are currently just the glabella, which is the space between the eyebrows, and the crow's feet, which is around the eyes. But in reality, there's a lot of different facial muscles that we can inject it into. Essentially, if you have a wrinkle and you don't want it, if someone knows the anatomy, they can target the appropriate muscle to stop that response. And so we can do it around the mouth, like you hear of this lip flip. That's when you actually inject the orbicularis oris, or the muscle around the mouth. And so if you weaken the ability to purse your lips, then the opposite is true and your lips actually turn out and look just a little bit bigger. So that's sort of a new popular one. We can inject right into the platysma, which is the muscle of the neck. So for patients who, you know, if guys are shaving and they make that kind of tense face and they get those bands in their neck, we can inject the platysma there just to soften it slightly. You know, depending on your dose, you're not necessarily totally paralyzing the entire muscle. You're just weakening it. And when you weaken it lessens the response, and you don't get the inadvertent wrinkle.
So moral of the story, Botox is safe and it treats mm-hmm. a lot of conditions, and find somebody that knows what they're doing.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, nothing awful is going to happen, but you want to love it. You know, right. If you love your Botox, something's probably wrong, because it's, you know, it's an excellent medication, and patients are usually just so, so happy. So if there's something about it you don't like, then maybe you should sort of question where you're going, or, you know, was this done exactly as it should be? Because all in all, it's a really safe medication. Patients love their results. And, you know, it's not really ever too young to start. There's a lot of talk about preventative Botox in your 20s. So before you even have that deep wrinkle, if you just lessen the amount that muscle contracts by doing it once or twice a year, then you're never going to make a wrinkle. I've been doing Botox since I was in my 20s, and I have no lines on my forehead because I never let those muscles work so hard that they were creating those deep, deep creases. And it just helps you sort of age gracefully without looking overdone.
Well, thank you for sharing all that about the Botox. Let's switch gears and talk more about you and your practice. So I'm assuming you see mostly females, but do you treat males?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I do. I mostly see women. I would have to say probably 10% or less are men. But we definitely see men for fillers and injectables. So neuromodulators like Dysport and Botox, they call it Brotox. And I think guys are always worried, like, oh, plastic surgery, am I going to look weird? But you don't. Like, you just look, you know, you remain youthful and you age really well. So I see a lot of men for those types of injectables. And then we also see men for surgery. It's different surgery. You know, usually men are looking for liposuction, or I do a lot of male gynecomastia surgery. So that's male breast development. So men have larger breasts a lot of times after puberty, or as they enter older age and lose some levels of testosterone. But there's lots of surgery that we can do on a male chest as well to just keep it very masculine looking as they age. And so those are kind of the most common things that I see men in my practice for.
I'm going back to this MTV show back in the day. I don't know if it was Real World or something, but the guy had calf implants. Do you do that? Have you ever done calf implants?
I don't. I'm sure you could find a plastic surgeon out there who would probably put them in for you. But yeah, implants in like various locations that don't have good soft tissue coverage, they extrude essentially. So, okay. You know, like people used to put implants in butts, and then you sit on incision, and eventually it wears thin and your implant comes out of your butt. And, you know, so we don't do those kind of things anymore. Yeah, we more so do liposuction around muscles to make them look more prominent, as opposed to actually putting or injecting something in the muscle itself.
Gotcha, makes sense. Sorry, I was on a tangent there. Going back to MTV. Back in the 90s. What is the most rewarding part of your job?
I mean, I get to take care of people. I think it would be hard to imagine how incredibly rewarding it is to take care of cosmetic patients, because on the outside, you think like, oh, that's kind of superficial, or, you know, people are just wanting to look more beautiful. But, you know, the reality is I take care of women just like me. I take care of moms, mostly who have had kids and are, you know, just getting out of that, like, breastfeeding, having a toddler, kind of crazy stage of our lives. And the physiologic reality is that our bodies change after we have kids, and our breasts change. And if we breastfeed, they deflate and our bellies expand to create human beings. And that takes a toll on your skin, and it takes a toll on the muscles in your abs. And there's physiologic changes that no diet or exercise can fix. And I see women who are super fit and super, super healthy and have very clean lifestyles, but there are things that they just can't change about their skin and their breasts and their muscle separation, which is called the rectus diastasis. Mm-hmm. And so I can offer something that they've been looking for. And so to have a solution to a problem that is really affecting their self-esteem is so profoundly rewarding. And every mom who comes in and sits in front of me every single day, it feels so uncomfortable doing something for herself because she's just devoted the past however many years to making babies and raising children. And to switch and switch over to self-care is so hard for them, but it's so unbelievable that every single patient on the other side of things, when they're healed and they have their body back and they just feel comfortable in their own skin again, that the confidence and the transformation and how that extends to every part of their lives is unbelievable. I can walk in a room and look at a patient's face and know how far postoperatively she is by how big she is smiling, because the women who come in are so self-conscious and so scared to sort of even show you what bothers them. And then afterwards, it's like, they're just back to themselves and they're glowing. And it's so cool to see every single day.
Well, shout out to my wife, all the wives out there, yourself, yeah. All the moms. I mean, you guys are rock stars and we just appreciate you guys so much. And it's so cool what you do. You get to empower moms every day. Mm-hmm. And that's so really important. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's really, really cool stuff.
So you talked about self-care. How do you practice self-care?
Oh, this is sort of the everlasting question. Cause when you're really busy, it's really hard, but it is definitely something that's paramount for me and my husband. And also as an example to our kids, like, I think it's important for your kids to see how you take care of yourselves and one another and your relationship, because it's setting them up to be healthy adults. So we have a very clean lifestyle. We eat, a lot of plant-based meals. We exercise every single day. I exercise 7 days a week and do yoga on sort of active recovery days. So I do that every morning to start my day off with self-care. And for me, that means I wake up at 5 a.m. or earlier because the surgery schedule starts so early. But that's what I do. I mean, that's what's important to me. That sets the tone of my day. So no matter what I'm doing, I'm starting the day taking care of myself. And that kind of permeates into my life. So, we do that. We have really, since we've had two children and we have two surgical careers, we set a lot of time aside for our relationship. And I think that that's been really, really healthy for us. So we do date night every week, whether it's going out to dinner or meeting up with friends, or last night we went to the theater and we do, season tickets to the Broadway theater here in town. Just getting out and doing things, sharing hobbies, being active together, going on family hikes and bike rides and things like that. When you have a busy life, you have to just take the time out for yourself. And I think it's really cool to see the kids understanding that that's just a healthy, normal part of life. You know, like when we wake up on the Saturday, they're like, mommy, did you get on your Peloton yet? Or are you going to ride after breakfast? You know, it's just, they're normal. And so I think that they're going to be healthier, sort of self-care focused adults because of that example that we're showing them.
They're always watching. If not us, then who, who's going to do it if we're not going to set that example for them? So I love that.
Yeah.
So what are you currently reading? I don't know if you're a big reader, but I am. And I always ask my guests, like, what are you guys reading right now?
I am a big reader. I just read and finished two nights ago, The Silent Patient. I don't know if you've ever...
I haven't heard of it. No.
Yeah. It's kind of a thriller on the medical side of things. And, but you don't have to be a physician to read it. It's just a super cool story about a patient who stops talking and the psychiatrist who treats her and how that kind of came about. So that was like a really, really quick read. The book I read before that was called The Midnight Library. Have you read that?
No.
Yeah, that should be on your list. Okay. So I mostly read fiction and then I listen to nonfiction on Audibles, but the Midnight Library is super cool. It's about a woman who takes her own life instead of sort of dying, she goes into this sort of limbo place, and this in-between world is actually a library. And all the books on the shelf are the remaining story of her life if she had made a different choice. So if she had majored in something different in college, she can take the book out of the shelf and see what her life would have been like if she went down that road. Or if
wow. a kid
walked into the coffee shop and she had just bought him a coffee and they had sat down and had a conversation and then a relationship develops, what her life would have been like with that road. So honestly, it's been one of the most compelling books I've read in a really long time, and one that like really sticks with you and you're thinking, like, can't stop thinking about it. And everything I do, I'm constantly just thinking about just all the repercussions of every decision that we make every day. But you should definitely read it. It was just one you'll never forget.
I'm going to check that one out. So mm-hmm. let's talk about your podcast. So tell us more about your podcast.
Yeah. So I have a really great female plastic surgery colleague, Dr. Smita Ramanatham, and she's a plastic surgeon, board certified plastic surgeon in New Jersey. And we're really dear friends. And during COVID, she and I were kind of putting our heads together and thinking like, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to do something fun and empowering when we're not operating? And we really wanted it to be education focused. So we decided to just start an Instagram TV show, doing just that, sitting down, just she and I, just like you are now, and talking about plastic surgery topics. So whether it's, you know, Botox or surgery or mentorship or how to get into a plastic surgery residency, we just sit down and chat, and there's no agenda. There's no sort of plan. We just talk live, and it's really fun. And so it's called Lipstick and Lipo. We cover a variety of topics. We got a super cool message about 6 months in on my DM on my Instagram handle, and the message was like, I love your Lipstick and Lipo, I'd love to set up a call. I'm a producer for the doctor's TV show. And we were like, oh no, this is totally bogus. There's no way that this is legit. And it was real. It was really a producer who had watched the show, thought it was awesome. And so last spring we were on The Doctors.
So cool.
Talking about Lipstick and Lipo. So it's really cool. We've been getting involved with the society with it as well. And we're going to change production and jazz it up a little bit and try to engage people on the YouTube side of things. So it's fun. It's exciting. It's definitely growing. And I think there's some exciting things in store. So you got to follow along. So mostly follow along on our Instagram handles. It's on IGTV right now. And we're starting to pick up the YouTube side of things too.
You never know what can happen. Just got to put it out there.
It's pretty cool how many, you know, how many doors have opened. And you know, we've been interviewed on ABC News, The Washington Post, all from Lipstick and Lipo. It's really cool.
So cool. So how can listeners connect with you online to hear more about your practice?
Cool. So Cotella.com is my medical practice, and you can go to the Cotella Center for Plastic Surgery and find information about how to get a hold of me for a surgical consult. You can follow along on Instagram. And if you don't, once you call and talk to the office, the girls are going to make sure you do. So Cotella Center for Plastic Surgery has a really cool Instagram handle where we're kind of showing all aspects of plastic surgery with me and all my partners. And then my own Instagram handle is Dr. Ashley Amalfi. The doctor is Dr. Ashley Amalfi. And so that's kind of a fun taste of before and afters and what it's like to be a plastic surgeon, and then just kind of being a busy mom and juggling it all. And it's pretty real for better or worse, but it's kind of fun to follow along. And it's been cool to see that most of my patients follow me on social media, and it just helps them get to know me. So that I think when they come in for a consultation that's otherwise kind of scary and a little bit intimidating, and you know, people are naked and taking pictures of, it's just a weird sort of experience. But when these people are following along on Instagram, they realize I'm just a mom like them doing the same thing that they are day in, day out. And it creates a level of comfort before they even step foot in the office. So it's been really a game changer for our practice. And I think social media is definitely the future and the way a lot of people are connecting with medicine right now.
I agree with that. I think it just removes a lot of barriers for them. And it just opens the doors and the conversation and makes them feel more comfortable. Because healthcare can be intimidating, can be scary. You don't know what you're getting yourself into. You know you need some help, but who do I go to? What does it look like? And what's the experience going to be like?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool that you're doing that. I like that.
I think seeing that behind the scenes has just been a game changer.
So final question. If you have a friend coming to Rochester who has never been here, where would you take them?
I think my favorite spot right now is my family's lake house on Lake Ontario. So, you know, I'm a big family person and our family has just renovated a really great place on the lake. And I think that Lake Ontario is sort of like an unexplored gem in this city. And I think that people don't realize just how expansive it is to just live right on the Great Lakes. And so I think, you know, the view from there is extraordinary, spending time with family and sharing good food and, you know, everything that comes with that experience. I think that that's definitely a moment I would love to share with people I care about.
Great answer. I thought you were going to say a Finger Lake, but you said Lake Ontario. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Even closer.
It's a huge lake. I grew up on Lake Erie, but yeah, Lake Ontario is huge.
Yeah. I mean, it's the real deal. I mean, there's another country across there. It doesn't get any better.
That's awesome. Well, Doc, thank you so much for your time, for sharing your passion and for empowering people, especially moms. It's so cool what you do. So thanks for your time.
I love it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you gained a lot of value from what Dr. Amalfi shared with us today, and we'll share this with family and friends. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me. Go to my website, driscollchiropracticny.com. Read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me info@driscollchiropracticny.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram @dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.